Okay, so, my name is Tomas. I'm an internet and technology addict. And thank you for the meeting. Thank you everyone for being here. Thank you for chairing Kevin and for the reading of being yourself. So I guess that, yeah, maybe there's some, I don't know, there's often a good coincidence with the reading. I guess I'll do my best to try to share what I've learned about myself as an addict and in recovery. So I'll start really kind of when my addiction started, which is kind of as far back as I can remember. So I'm 26 years old, and I grew up with technology, and I really remember, I have very early memories of the joy that technology brought me. I remember kind of, you know, anytime the television was on, this kind of light coming into my life. And I think someone may have their audio unmuted. If you wouldn't mind just muting if you're, if you've joined. But yeah, I think technology, like, it just had a special quality to it that I think I enjoyed lots of parts of life growing up, but there was definitely this feeling of entering into another dimension. And I would love when my mom would leave the home so that I could watch television or go onto the computer. And when we got the internet around when I was 9 or 10, it felt like, I don't know, even more of that, this really like sense of total freedom, possibility, magic. And I wanted to spend as much time as I could on there. And we also had some handheld video games. And as I got older, I looked for, I think, more and more opportunities to spend time this way. So I started getting a little bit more independent. I was able to spend more time in my room with my Game Boy. Or when I was in middle school, I started sneaking out when the rest of my family had gone to sleep, and just staying up all night watching funny videos and playing video games. And then I'd go back kind of before people woke up, maybe around 4 a.m., 3 a.m., and get into bed. And then I would fake sick because I hadn't done any homework. And so this is when also I think the shame really started for me. When I was young, there was still a sense of not everyone was online the way they are today. And there was a sense of this being really socially unattractive. And so it was something I kept very secret from my family, from my friends. And I started suffering these consequences of my grades really plummeted. I was getting D's and in middle school, and I almost had to repeat a grade because I missed so many days of school. And of course I couldn't tell people. I was just, you know, cared more about watching videos than anything else. I told people I was really sick, and I told myself I was too smart for school, and I could do the homework at the last minute and pull it off. And so I got into a place where I became very afraid of others, of myself, and I really started living a life of secrecy. And that continued throughout high school. And I got into a good college. I was able to pull through in high school and, yeah, get into a good school. And this was a school I really wanted to be in, and I was studying something I really cared about. And around this age, 17, 18, I knew this was a problem for myself. I had felt so much regret where I'd been procrastinating, missing deadlines, faking sick again, and really feeling like I was wasting all of my time. I was wasting my childhood. I mean, I vividly remember thinking, like, these are supposed to be my golden years, right? Like my, these kinds of incredibly formative periods of my life. And yeah, I mean, I can think back on my childhood memories and I can think through like every game, like level design of every game I ever play. I can think through the memes I watched and the videos and the characters. And that's what's in my memory. And I felt a lot of shame about that. And so I started trying to control this. I started thinking, okay, I don't want to do this. And I tried leaving my laptop at home when I went to college. That didn't work. I decided I needed it. So the first time I went back home, I got it again. And then I started binging way harder than I ever had before. And I got into these really terrible cycles of control and binge. My main method of control, I did use some blockers, and but really the way I tried to control this was self-hatred. You know, just telling myself like when I'd come out of a binge, just like this onslaught of self-shaming, like, you're weak, you'll like, I will kill you if you do this again. Like, just anything I could to just shock myself out of the stupor I kept finding myself in. And this, of course, was even bigger, a bigger secret in college, because I was, you know, supposedly studying something that mattered a lot to me. I wanted that image to be the image other people around me had in school. I didn't want people to think I was up till 6 a.m., you know, watching YouTube videos. And it always still seemed like it was really annoying and frustrating, but it still seemed like a little problem that I just, you know, flared up sometimes. But I really denied, you know, kept from myself what was happening. And I just had a reputation of being really sleep deprived, which I think fed into this reputation of me being very hardworking. And usually I'd have these major, you know, massive binges right before a big deadline. And kind of right when I was supposed to be digging in, I would, just fall into YouTube, online movies, television, pornography, Reddit, you know, obsessive research. I was, you know, I Googled so many questions that just Google can never answer. Like, why don't I have any friends? How do I become successful? And I would just read the same answers over and over again when I was supposed to be working on the things, on my school assignments, the things that might have made me successful. Or, I mean, I just felt very conscious of how trapped I was, but I couldn't see a way out. Emotionally, anything other than what I was doing seemed intolerable. And I think one turning point for me was I got a scholarship one summer to go to New York and to work on an independent project, and my housing was covered. And this was sort of a dream I'd had since I was, you know, a kid, to do this, have the opportunity I had. And I just found that I was putting all of my time into YouTube. I was in this apartment with this, you know, a dusty, hot room. The AC didn't work. And I was on my iPhone because I couldn't get the Wi-Fi to stream fast enough. So it was just like chewing through tons of data and just watching YouTube videos of things I didn't want to watch. These felt like I started watching it as a joke, and then I really couldn't stop, and the content was just endless. And I would only leave the apartment to buy ice cream and potato chips, and, you know, I just would hope I wouldn't see anyone on the way, because all I wanted was to get back and keep watching. And every video I would say, this is the last one. And I'm sure that's familiar to a lot of people, but it's just like, yeah, just, you know, hundreds of times in a night, I'm just telling myself, just one more, just one more, just 15 more minutes, just 30 more minutes. And and I just had this really vivid memory of thinking, like, feeling totally paralyzed in my body and thinking to myself, like, stop, just stop doing what you're doing. Like, please stop. And I'm just totally incapable. Like, my hands had like a mind of their own. And I was really scared, I think, this summer, because I had this incredible opportunity that my rational mind knew meant so much to me. I mean, like, it would be hard to have asked for anything more. And I just somehow found myself doing something I found no pleasure in doing repeatedly, to great cost to my personal health. And it was really scary. And I started seeing a therapist, and there was very little awareness of what, I mean, I think he could tell I was suffering, but I think he was thinking, you know, maybe I'm being neurotic in how hard I am on myself. I think he was encouraging me to, you know, think that it's okay to relax or do things that aren't productive, to kind of reduce maybe my shame around this. But I certainly felt like that was the first time I thought, maybe this is like what alcoholics experience, because it sounds so much like that. And I looked around, I Googled, you know, is there any, I was in New York, I was sure there'd be some group in New York. I felt sure I couldn't be the only one. And I really couldn't find anything in New York or anywhere else in the world. And so I really did think I must be the only one. And I thought, you know, this isn't an addiction. I'm exaggerating. I'm just weak. I'm lazy. I procrastinate. And that's on me. And so maybe there was another 3 years of this back and forth of really frightening, self-destructive binges. You know, my social life was totally characterized by, which I couldn't have realized in the moment, but just looking back, I just had so much fear in me. I felt like a shell, and I was terrified of anyone finding out who the real me was. I graduated I got another scholarship for another independent project, and I spent that summer also online just reading the news. This was ahead of the presidential election. I was just reading news 10 hours a day and, you know, checking Google News every 5-10 minutes to see what the news story was, and then any detail I'd have to read in like 20 different outlets and maybe check out the international take on this. And and then I lost a job later that year. It was up till 4 a.m. watching television shows, and I just totally slept through this job. And it was a one-on-one, you know, project I was working on with someone, and they said I need to be able to rely on someone. And then I missed a birthday. I missed my own birthday. I was up till 7 a.m. the night before, and I woke up in the evening to a bunch of missed calls. And that prompted me to look online again. I really felt like something has to change. I can't ever do this again. And so I looked online, and I found through a Reddit board link to a fellowship for computer gaming. I actually had found that a couple weeks before this incident with my birthday. And I'd thought at the time, well, okay, it's good to know about that, but I have this under control now. And I really, you know, had a lot of resistance to actually going to this thing. And I was like, I'll read some of the articles that they have on their website, and I think I can do this now. And then after this bottom with my birthday, the next day I went to my first 12-step meeting. That's May 23rd, 2017. And I haven't played a video game since then. It's been 2 years and 10 months. And I went to a meeting every day. And it was really hard to start to share as someone who basically had been living in secrecy since I was a kid. It really felt like this novel experience, like what I'm doing right now. I'm not thinking what I'm going to say before I say it. I feel comfortable. I feel safe here. And when I first came into the program, I had to rehearse what I would say during my share, because I was terrified, you know, subconsciously of saying the wrong thing. And but I just kept going to meetings every day, and I kept staying off games. I did notice, though, about a month into the program, that I was still having these same patterns with my internet behavior. So, you know, I was still going on YouTube. I was still reading the news, you know, and it was much better than when I was playing games, but, you know, still up till early in the morning. And I started finding myself watching YouTube videos of other people playing games and watching trailers of video games. And I thought, I'm never going to stay sober if I don't work on this. And I heard someone else share in a meeting that they were also struggling with the internet in general. I reached out to them after the meeting, and they had been in contact with another member. And the three of us started having calls for ITAA. And that was summer 2017. I found that much harder than computer gaming. With computer gaming, I think I felt kind of good about myself. I haven't played a game since my first meeting, so I felt like this was the missing ingredient. I just need to be part of a fellowship. But with the internet it felt so much harder to actually know what sobriety even meant. And I'd start checking my bank accounts and I'd end up, you know, watching my fourth movie at 5 a.m. 10 hours later. And it just felt extremely confusing to understand how to even approach this. And I think my guiding principle in the early days for me was just keep going to meetings, just keep sharing and keep understanding what's going on, because I'd never had the space to talk about what was happening. And I, you know, in never talking about it with anyone else, I never heard what I needed to hear of my own, you know, of myself. Like, when I share at meetings, I hear what I say in a way I never would have heard it if I hadn't gone. So I started building more self-awareness and a better sense of intuition. And I kept kind of clunking along like this, slipping, sliding for about 6 months. And I'd have 2 weeks or 4 weeks, and then I'd have a binge. And I heard something that made a really big change in my own recovery, which was to, I was listening to a interview with an addiction counselor for overeating, a compulsive overeating, which became a really incredible resource for me, OA, as another addiction that people still have to eat every day. But what I heard in this interview, what I heard this woman say, was to treat recovery like an Olympic sport. And that basically it's, you know, when you're training for an Olympic sport, that's the main priority. That's what your life is organized around. And something in that clicked for me, because I had just been coming to ITAA. I'd just been showing up and waiting for recovery to happen to me. That's kind of how it happened in this other fellowship I joined. And I wasn't seeing any progress. With my internet addiction, I kept coming back to the same place I'd started. And something about hearing this clicked, and I decided to get very active about my recovery. I started scheduling in my meetings. I would tell other people I wasn't available. It was always the first thing to go. If anyone was like, "Hey, do you want to do something this weekend?" I'd be like, "Oh, thank God. Like, I don't have to go to the ITAA meeting, because I have some plans, and that means I'm safe anyways, because I'm with other people." So I started really prioritizing meetings and scheduling them in. I tried every tool I could. I started bookending with people, logging my time, making daily action plans. I ended up getting rid of my smartphone, which I did that for a year. I got rid of my internet at my home. I started reading literature. When I first came into 12-step, I was really resistant to the program, to the literature, to the 12 steps. And I just, you know, I didn't, you know, I just left that side of the program off to the side, and I focused on what was helpful for me. But I really started reading. I started a reading group with some of the other members. At this point, we were still very, very few of us. And we just would read passages out loud and then share about our reflections. And I was sharing a lot of resentment about, like, "Oh, I hate this," or like, this is what's wrong with this. I mean, it wasn't like that. I think it was a little more nuanced, but that was kind of the feelings I was getting out. And that was actually really constructive for me. And so I really started trying to engage as much as I could. And none of it worked. I had a really big binge then. I think the timeline was actually that I got very demoralized after one binge, and one experiment I decided to try out was to just, measure my time, log all my time, and not try to be sober, but just bring more awareness to what was going on. I'd read about, behavioral therapy experiments in, measuring behavior and self-modification. So I was tracking and I was going along pretty well for a while, but then I had this really massive binge. I lasted maybe 3 days. I didn't sleep at all. I passed out, I think twice, for like an hour in those 3 days. And I was watching like this mega director's cut of a movie series, and in between that was news and YouTube and junk food, and I just couldn't stop. And I came out of that binge. I called another member as soon as I went outside and I just breathed. It was like 11 p.m. on the third day. I called this member and I said, "What happened?" And I said, "I never want to feel this way again. And I need to change something." And I think I'd put in enough footwork from all of this past work and all of these tools I've been trying that, I can't say it's totally up to me or it was totally up to me, but for whatever reason, I had this first stretch of sobriety, of real sobriety from my bottom line behaviors. And that was about 9 months. 9 months without an all-night binge, 9 months without watching movies and television by myself and all my other behaviors. And that was life-changing. I was describing a little bit before the meeting to someone that I felt sober, and I never could have imagined what that really felt like, because I'd been an addict my whole life. And it was even hard, even coming to the program, to identify as an addict. I'd never done drugs in an addictive way. I'd never had a drinking problem. I never thought of myself as an addict. But when I felt sober, compared to the withdrawal symptoms, the irritability, the foggy-headedness, the obsession, just feeling clear-headed, feeling emotions, feeling just able to sit in my own skin, was really new. After these 9 months, I was traveling and I felt like, oh, maybe, now I've got this under control, and I have this great excuse. I don't need to call other members. I don't need to go to meetings. I had this very intense work trip, so I'll just take a 2-week break from ITAA. And I ended up relapsing on this trip. I watched pornography, and I watched it one late night. I'd been working late. I was on my own. And then I just got the urge and I watched it. And I thought, well, no one needs to know about that. And it won't happen again. And then it happened again the next day. And I had the same thought. And then it happened again a couple hours later. And I was like, okay, I had been with someone and they had to run across the street to grab something. And I started looking at pornography. And I just felt like so quickly I was back in my own insanity. And it really shocked me. And I'd heard stories of this, of people who'd been sober for years, and then they relapse and it comes back harder than even before. And it was scary to feel this sense of self that I'd discovered just really crumble. And I was back to this really trapped place. So that was actually a really good slip for me, or a good relapse. And let's see, I think I've been talking for about 30 minutes, so I'll try to wrap this up in the next 5 minutes. But I've had a couple more slips since then. So most recently around the new year. So actually, you know, tomorrow is 3 months since my last slip. What I've really, the way my program has really built around these slips and these issues is that I've become much more rigorous about the patterns of my own compulsion. And even though I'm not in a gym, you know, training 10 hours a day the way an Olympic athlete might, my whole life is organized around protecting me from my internet and technology addiction. And I've really shifted from the bottom lines, which were the things that I thought were supposed to be the most important part of the program, like the things you don't want to do, to the middle lines and the top lines. So really focusing on anything that puts me in a situation where I might be vulnerable to an urge, or I might not have the tools to reach out to someone in that moment, is something I avoid unless absolutely necessary. So I don't read the news. I hardly, rarely buy things online. And I work this program really actively. I come to a meeting at least once a week, usually at least twice a week. I make lots of calls the last couple weeks with everything that's been going on. I've been making a call every day, sometimes multiple calls. I have a lot of scheduled calls also, so one-on-one calls. I have a number of sponsees, and also like I have a co-sponsor. And I'm working the steps. And I think that there really was a shift, and it's happened in different steps over time, but really towards coming to terms with the reality of my condition and how coming to these meetings and being able to share really helps me build a safety net where I really know to myself that I don't want these behaviors for my life. I don't want these patterns. And really the thing that has made the difference is joining this group, making the decision to stop trying to do this on my own. Because I've tried my whole life to do it on my own. And this is really the only thing that has worked. And I think I came into the program skeptical of people saying things like that. I'd got my hopes up so many times and had them crushed so many times. It's hard to really find a better word than the word miracle. It really feels like a transformation that I never could have possibly envisioned or expected. And it's been so life-changing and so astounding that this tiny detail, which for me was this little internet problem that I tried to keep in the corner of my life and sometimes caused problems, but no one knew about and wasn't actually a big deal. Like, everyone uses YouTube anyways. That little corner of my life would, end up being, by healing what was going on there, like the most profound experiential, or most profound change in my experience of life. That's been totally surprising to me. And I think it's still a process and a journey. I'm still learning a lot. I am still working the program. I have been to a couple, open AA meetings where I hear people share how they've been sober for 30 plus years. And it just like blows my mind that I'm at the very beginning of this. And I think, essentially in as concrete a way as possible, like everyone who's on this call listening to me, like you're the reason I'm sober. And there's like basically like nothing I could feel more grateful for. So that's kind of, yeah, maybe I'll leave it there. That's my story. I'm Tomas, and I'm an internet and technology addict. And thank you everyone for listening.